Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, former German international who now sits on the executive board member of sport at Eintracht Frankfurt, Freddy Bobic, will be joining us to talk about preparations for getting things back up and running in the Bundesliga. Also, Danny Higginbotham upsets Julian Laurent with his suggestion that Jordan Henderson should be named Player of the Year in England. But we start, as we always do, by taking a look at the latest coronavirus news. And we're talking about the Premier League. And it's interesting if you take a look at the European Notebook and a comment from what Mark Ogden had to say within the article, which was released, saying, sources have said that some players are increasingly antagonised by high-profile players voicing concerns from their pools at their holiday homes in the sun about safety issues where many players need and want to return in order to safeguard their careers and playing futures. Well, let's welcome Stevie Nicol and Danny Higginbotham in to discuss this. You can take a look at a case in point, I suppose. Kun Aguero, for example, has voiced his fears about coming back. But in theory, he could retire tomorrow and be financially fine. We're talking about players who aren't in that situation. And Danny, you were kind of in that situation. Would it affect you, your choice about whether or not to come back?
No, because then what you're doing, you're looking at wealth before health. And I don't think it matters whether you're a player that's earning $5 million, $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $5 million a year, or whether you're someone that's earning a lot less. It really doesn't matter because it can still affect those people. So I don't necessarily agree with the statements. You know, if players are saying that it's okay for certain individuals to say that because obviously they've earned a lot of money throughout their career. In my opinion, it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. It's not to do with the financial side of things because, like I say, no matter how much you earn, if you get back on that football pitch, you've got as much chance of getting it as whoever else is on that pitch with you. So I disagree with those statements.
Stevie, if you were playing today, how comfortable would you be about returning to action?
I would be comfortable if there were certain things in place that meant every avenue was put in place to not guarantee your safety, because you can never do that. But the level of safety would be my only concern. It's all about cutting down the percentages of somebody actually catching the virus, and probably more importantly for players, because players just want to play. I think if I'm a player, if I was still a player, my concern wouldn't be playing. My concern would be, do I take something back home? So regardless of the money situation, it has to be about how safety the environment you're put into is. And clearly, you can never guarantee it. It will never be 100%. But I guess individuals will judge what the percentages are and make a decision from there.
One of the problems you also have is that if players now are saying, right, okay, you know, we've seen what's happened over recent weeks, especially with Bundesliga in Germany, you know, things are starting to look better for Germany as a country. Now, if you don't start the games up now, then basically what you're saying is that you're not going to start until there's a cure. Now, how long is it going to be until there's a cure? Is it going to be 1 year? Is it going to be 2 years, 3 years? We don't know. Nobody knows. So therefore, what you're saying is that there's going to be no football in that time. We all know that there is a certain risk within it. And like Stevie just quite rightly said, the biggest thing that I would be concerned about as a player is if I was to get it and actually then take it home to a family member, that would be the worst possible outcome for me.
Would you come back though, Danny?
I think if I knew what the stipulations were and I knew that there was very little chance of me getting it, then yeah, I think I would do. I think if you'd have asked me 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have said no. But I think the way that things are going at the moment, like I say, specifically we're looking at the Bundesliga and how things are being done there, the fact that Germany is getting a lot better now, I think that I probably would do. Because I think there's talk about having maybe 2 tests a week, something like that, and, you know, making sure that everybody's okay and being able to have the test. So that's the big thing. But I think there does come a point where you get to a point where you can only get as close as possible without actually having the cure to then go and carry on with the football.
Meanwhile, there will be some changes, won't there, when football returns. We know that IFAB have approved now 5 substitutions because the frequency of the games will increase. Stevie, what do you make of this? It will be 5 substitutions, but they can only be made, as we see now, 3 times during the match.
I'm scared to say anything in case I say the wrong thing. I mean, come on. Do you know what? Every man and his dog, we're always complaining about pre-season games when they're making all these substitutions. And it kind of smacks of that. The other thing is, you know, part of the whole game is about the manager getting his tactics right and picking the right players. And players performing. Players having a level of physicality that they can play so many games. You know, there are so many things out with, you know, just actually playing the game. Where's it going to stop? Listen, I thought two subs was fine years ago, and then they made it three. Wasn't that happy, but you know what? Okay. But come on, five? I mean, really, what is going on? And they're talking about the frequency of games. Listen, you're going to play three games a week. Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Nobody's going to make you play anymore, and nobody should be allowed to play anymore. And if you can't do that, then you're in the wrong game. So don't try and make this thing easier by saying, oh, right, let's have 10 subs then. If you don't fancy what's going on with your team, put another one on. I mean, where does it stop? Come on, five's far too many.
Danny, Stevie sitting on the fence there, not really quite sure which way he's going. What do you think?
I think, you know, obviously Stevie won't agree, but I think we should have at least five subs. I understand where Stevie's coming from during the season, and obviously, you know, when there's been two subs before,
why?
When there's been three subs, obviously we know now that there's seven subs and three can be used, but these are extreme circumstances. It's not going to be, you know, something that's going to stay in forever. But I just feel that what's going to happen is these players are not going to play. By the time they step on the football pitch, they're not going to play for probably 2 or 3 months. And myself, when I was playing, you played a pre-season game. The first game, it'd always be 11 players the first 45 minutes and then another 11 players the next 45 minutes. Because the problem you're going to have is that your first pre-season game is actually going to be a competitive Premier League game. So if you have five substitutes, that's all well and good. But that means that five players from the word go, they've got to play the full 90 minutes in a fully competitive match. So I'm all for having more substitutes just while this is going on, because there are extreme circumstances. But then when the new season does start in the future, we go back to what it's been.
Stevie?
I mean, so if you're Bournemouth and you're stuck in a relegation battle, you're not going to want to make five subs. The reason you're stuck at the bottom is because your starting 11's as good as you've got. So you're going to play against Liverpool and they can make five changes when you know that you've got 11, your 11 players, or you think they can't last. What you're saying is, well, they'll never be able to last a game or three games in a week. Then they're absolutely knackered, aren't they? Because there's no way you're going to take off some of your better players, even if they're tired, because the guy you're putting on, you know, is absolutely not good enough. I mean, you're making it easier again. Like most things, the bigger clubs with the bigger squads, it makes it far easier for them. So basically, what you're doing is you're hamstringing the small teams as well.
To a certain extent, yeah. But I think the problem is that if you're going back without doing anything for 3 months, you know, you've not had any competitive matches, and then you're going to turn up on a football pitch, I would rather have more substitutes than have to play with, say, eight players. If my players are getting cramp in their first competitive game, and the first competitive game is a Premier League game, you're getting players there getting injuries, you know, because otherwise, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you could end up with games where it ends up being 8v8 because players just aren't capable of doing it. I think for the first two or three games, it will be an issue. Then I think after that, when they start to, you know, hit the ground and they're able to get going, then I think they'll be okay. But I just think it's, you know, that with the safety in mind, with the health in mind, the manager might look at a player and go, listen, he needs to come off. Also, otherwise, you know, he's not going to be available for our next game, which might be, like you've quite rightly said, in 2 or 3 days' time.
The games are not going to be played at the same pace. You know, you're not going to go back and see, you're not going to go and see a game that's played at the incredible pace that it is. So everything's going to be, it's going to be a level playing field for everybody. So let's keep it a level playing field, because giving five subs ain't a level playing field for the smaller teams. No chance.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, Danny with me on Extra Time today, joined by Shaka Hyssop. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel. It was 7 years ago to the day that we learned that Sir Alex Ferguson was retiring as coach at Manchester United. Mark Ogden has looked at what has happened since. Danny Higginbottom is still with us, and we're not going to talk to you about Manchester United, Danny, for I think the first time ever. Julianne Aron joins the show as well, because Danny, we wanted you to give us your Premier League team of the year so far. And I tell you what, there was one thing that just jumped off the page when I looked at this, Danny, and that was no Sadio Mane.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Mane and Salah will be in, I'm sure, numerous people's teams. But I just think when you look at Ings, what he's done for Southampton, without them, they'd have been relegated this season, you know, and he won't be a lot of people's choice. But for him to score the amount of goals that he's scored in a team that's really struggled, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the players from the top teams in the Premier League. And I just thought I would look about for the individual, what they've done, how they've had such an effect on their team. Because like I say, Southampton, you take him out of that team, they would get relegated. I look at Mane, would they win the Premier League without him? You could still say they could do because of the ability that they've got in that team. But I just think Ings has been absolutely outstanding this season. And let's not forget, it took him a while to get into the team and he's still managed to get 15 Premier League goals.
Sadio Mane, Danny.
Yeah. What, you want me to say why I haven't picked him?
Yes, it's a man who's been key. You could argue he's been the player of the year.
Sorry?
You could argue he's been the player of the year.
No, I don't think that he has been the player of the year, and obviously we'll get onto that next. But I just think when I look at a individual players or what they've brought to a team, I look at Ings, I look at Vardy, top goal scorer in the Premier League. I look at Aubameyang, top goal scorer for Arsenal, scored 17 goals. Arsenal have only scored 40 goals, so he's near enough got half of the goals that Arsenal have scored. Leicester, Jamie Vardy, still doing it at the age that he is. You know, top goal scorer. So Mane, yes, I understand it. People are saying, oh, I can't believe you're saying that. You know, but at the end of the day, the reason I've said it is because I look at that Liverpool team and they're an outstanding team. This is about individuals that, in particular, for Ings's, you know, inclusion, that have stood out in a team that haven't stood out. Arsenal, this season, they've been well below average. Aubameyang has stood out. Vardy has completely changed the way that he plays the game, the way that he now, in my opinion, is the all-round centre-forward, the way that players are feeding off him. So that's why I've gone for those three up front instead of Mane. And like I say, I'll probably get a bit of stick for it, but, you know, I'm looking at an individual basis and what they're actually bringing to a team, in particular Southampton and Arsenal. Otherwise, where would they be in the league without them?
Jules?
I would put Sadio Mane in my team. I get everything that Danny is saying. I think Mane, it's not just, I think, 17 goals and 8 assists, which... That's still a lot of goals in a season. It's also in the key moments where Liverpool were drawing or sometimes even losing. Not that happened a lot. And he was there. He was the clutch man. He was the key man to get the 3 points and to get them on that incredible run that they went on to. So I think I would have Mane there. I would have Ings as well and Vardy. Aubameyang is the one for me that would not make it in my team of the year. And I would have Sadio Mane instead.
Anything else for you, Jules, that you disagreed with?
I love Danny and I respect a lot of his team, but no, I'm kidding. So I mean, I would go with Henderson in goal because I think Sheffield United have been incredible, and Chris Wilder, both me and Danny would pick him as the manager of the year without even a debate. But I think Henderson has been so key in what Sheffield United have done this season. He's been outstanding on his line. I think he's a wonderful young keeper. He's learning fast. He's listening. He's got a lot of good, very positive thing about himself as a person as well as a football player. So I would put him ahead of Alisson. There will be no Henderson, the other Henderson, Jordan Henderson in my team, and Wilfred Ndidi for me has been the best defensive midfielder in the league so far this season. And I would have had also Gini Wijnaldum, who is for me the most intelligent player that we have in the Premier League right now.
Let's talk about Jordan Henderson then in a little more detail, shall we? Danny has named him as the player of the season. Jules, I'm guessing if he's not in your team of the year, he's not your player of the season.
No, he's not. I mean, I have to say, I've never been a big fan of the player Henderson. I think he's a great guy and has got a lot of qualities as a person, and in terms of leadership is great, and why he represents for Liverpool Football Club and what Liverpool means to him as well. This is brilliant, and that's all great, and I think Klopp has taken his game to the next level, but yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the player. And that's why for me he's not the player of the year. I think Wijnaldum, if you take a Liverpool player, deserve it more, because like I said, he's so intelligent. He's the one that can do everything in that team. He's the one that Klopp relies on a lot, I think, in midfield to do the link between the back four and the three up front, to clean it up in midfield, to boss the games, but also to score goals, even if he can score more. And that's one of a debate we had with Stevie Nicol on the show a few weeks ago. But yeah, for me, Wijnaldum is an amazing football player.
Danny?
Yeah, the reason I've gone for Henderson is that there's two things that stand out from this season. So one was the Watford game, their only defeat this season. Henderson was missing. And I think a lot of the times you realise how good a player is when they're not actually involved in the game. And then I go back to the Manchester City home game as well, where they won 3-1. You know, tactically, Klopp got it absolutely spot on. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Manchester City looked to really target him. So what Klopp did, he played near enough a 4-4-1-1, and he played Henderson as a right winger. Allowed Trent Alexander-Arnold to stay back. Henderson got the assist. And I just think it's what he brings to the team. We've seen, you know, a lot of people associate him with just being this defensive midfielder. We've seen him getting further forward this season. He's got more goals. He's getting more assists. And I just think the leadership that he brings to that team as well. Liverpool are a better team with him in it. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. And whether that's playing as a defensive midfielder or being a more attack-minded, I think he just brings the best out in other players around him. And I think the one thing that's always been asked of Henderson, and it would have been the same for anybody else that went to Liverpool, a central midfielder that's the captain, you're always going to be compared to Steven Gerrard, which is ridiculous in my opinion, because Steven Gerrard was a one-off. You know, he's such an exquisite player and he was always going to be difficult to replace. But I just think that Henderson has found himself now at Liverpool. He's found his role there and he's found a way to actually, you know, lead that team and be the leader on the pitch that we've seen time and time again for him. So that's why I've gone for him. And, you know, sometimes the players that do get it, the ones that are always pleasing on the eye. But other times there'll be players like myself, you appreciate players like Jordan Henderson because at times he'll do the dirty work to allow other players to go and express themselves higher up the pitch.
Meanwhile, you both agree that Chris Wilder should get manager of the season ahead of Jurgen Klopp. I don't get this. I don't get this at all, considering what Liverpool have achieved, how extraordinarily dominant they have been. I understand it's nice. Sheffield United favourites to get relegated. Look at what he's done. But surely we're just taking Jurgen Klopp's work, aren't we, Danny, at Liverpool, for complete and utter granted. You bring in a manager to win you titles, and that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah, he has done that. And the one thing I would say, if the summer before the season started, if I would have said to you, Sheffield United have got a chance for Champions League football, or Liverpool are going to win the Premier League, what would you have said is more likely? It's as simple as
that. And if Liverpool, I was to say to you, Liverpool were going to win the Premier League in the dominant fashion, they would only lose one game along the way, they would absolutely sweep aside every single opposition. I understand Sheffield United doing what they've done is brilliant, and Chris Wilder has done an exceptional job with the players that he's got, but could Chris Wilder have won the title with Liverpool in the way that Jurgen Klopp has done? I think Jurgen Klopp could have kept Sheffield United up. I'm not sure Chris Wilder could have achieved what Klopp has done at Anfield.
The way I look at it was that, you know, but for Manchester City being absolutely sensational last season and going on that incredible run towards the end of the season, Liverpool would have won the league. Are Manchester City better than what they were last season? No, they're not. They're not as good as what they were last season. They've lost Vincent Kompany. They've had, you know, the injuries in the centre-back position. Laporte, arguably one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League. Fernandinho has had to move back there. We know the problems that Tottenham have had. Chelsea bringing in a new manager as well, bringing younger players through. We know the problems that Arsenal have had, that Manchester United have had. There's a number of teams that are in a transitional period. In my opinion, you know, Liverpool, unbelievable. They've been absolutely outstanding this season. But I would have been more surprised if Liverpool didn't win the league this season because of what I've just mentioned about the clubs that you would perceive to be challenging, who haven't had a good season for one reason or another, are in transition, have lost players, have had injuries to key players. Whereas when you look at Klopp and you say, OK, well, you take over Sheffield United, there's no way that that team would potentially finish in the Champions League. So I think it's a greater achievement for what Chris Wilder has done to get this team onto the cusp of actually getting Champions League football in their first year in the Premier League, arguably finishing above Manchester United, arguably finishing above Arsenal, arguably finishing above Tottenham. Tottenham, Arsenal, and Manchester United have spent more on one player than I would probably say Sheffield United have spent on the whole of their squad. So that's why I'm going for Sheffield United and Chris Wilder without question in my mind.
Well, yesterday, of course, we discussed that extraordinary comeback for Liverpool against Barcelona at Anfield. It really was just the best 48 hours for neutral entertainment, wasn't it, last year? Because you had the Liverpool game and then the day later, Ajax taking on Spurs. Remember, Ajax 1-0 up after the first leg in London. Took a 2-0 lead then, making it 3-0 at half-time. Spurs need to score three. They scored three. Lucas Moura with pretty much the last kick of the game, guaranteeing a place in the next round. This was special, wasn't it, Jules?
It was very special indeed. And I know that Lucas still cries when he watches the goals that he scored that night, that incredible hat-trick, especially the third one, right in added time, the last kick of the game. This is the kind of thing that, as a player, you dream of. I mean, even if you're not a player, I dream of that, and I would never do it. And Lucas and Danny probably dreamed of that, and I'm not sure if he did it. And Lucas did it, and I think it's just incredible to go through something like that. Of course, they didn't win the final, and that forever will hurt them. But that semi-final, second leg in Amsterdam, will stay forever in anyone who was on that pitch, both for Ajax and for Spurs. Forever will stay in their mind, and if you were a fan and you were there, even if you were not there, it will always stay forever with you as well.
Just didn't see it coming, did we, Danny?
No, obviously Ajax took a 2-0 lead very early on, which put them 3-0 up on aggregate, but then it got to half time, and as bizarre as it sounds, I didn't think Tottenham were out of it because of what had happened the previous night with Liverpool. And Lucas Moura was absolutely sensational. I felt sorry for him in the first half because I felt that Tottenham played into Ajax's hands. Tottenham needed to play out from the back because they didn't have a physical presence up front. It meant that Ajax could press high and Lucas up front, he was very isolated. Nobody really talks about it, but Llorente was defining in this game. He came on at half-time, I think it was for Wanyama. And they then had that focal point. They had that physical presence. So when Ajax was still pressing high, the innocence of youth and probably a little bit naivety, Tottenham were able to go over their press. And when they went over the press to Llorente, every single time Lucas Moura gambled off him. And his pace then started to take advantage of the lack of pace that Ajax had at the back. And it was a wonderful bit of tactical nous from Pochettino at half-time. Like I say, it was just a sensation. It was a sensational week for Premier League teams in Europe because nobody expected it or nobody saw it coming.
If Chris Wilder was in charge of Spurs, would they have won the final, Danny?
Yeah, because they would have started better than Tottenham started. Start well, that's what Chris Wilder teams always do, and that's what Tottenham didn't do.
Thank you very much, guys. Just a reminder, the latest edition of our ESPN FC quiz is all about the Champions League. Mark Ogden against Ian Dark. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
In case you missed it then, the schedule announced for next weekend's Bundesliga games. On Saturday, you've got the likes of Borussia Dortmund taking on Schalke. Also, Eintracht Frankfurt taking on Borussia Mönchengladbach. And I'm delighted to welcome Freddy Bobic, a former German international, now the executive member, board member of sport at Frankfurt, who's joining us now. It's been incredible just watching all this play out over the last few days. Freddie, what's it been like to be involved in a situation where all of a sudden you're being told that, yes, matches are going ahead?
Well, it was a lot of stress, you know, because we had so many conference calls. We're talking We had this different commissions task force, medicine, then the politicians, you know, everybody involved in this to reopen or restart the league again. We are really excited, really happy to come back, and as the first league, also globally the first league, that would be a big impact for Germany, but for the Bundesliga anyway.
Now, is it a feeling of excitement amongst the players, apprehension? How are they feeling?
They're feeling good, you know, because the boys, they only like to play football. You know, it's just, they love it to compete against the other teams, to score goals, you know. That is always the goal what they're chasing. And especially also the last weeks was very difficult for the players. They only trained in small groups, like 5 to 8, were allowed to train together. And so they starting 2 days ago with, again, to go in touch, yeah, to with the other players, then regular training, everything, you know, kicking, sliding. That was really, really exciting to see, you know, like kids, you took them something, you know, now they can do it again, and they've been so emotional and about that, but it's a short time, it's only a short time until we will start and Saturday in 1 week, and so hopefully nobody will get injured, because the preparation to the first game is very short.
That's it. There's only 8 days to go now until that first game for you guys against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And what's interesting about that game is that it's on its own. There's no other games around it. So it won't only be Germany watching, but just football fans around the world who maybe have never watched the Bundesliga before, but want to watch some live soccer. How is it going to be amongst the players for that? Can you treat it as just another game? Surely you're going to be aware of the greater audience that's going to be watching.
Yeah, sure. And then I will do a speech, and also next week, a couple of days before the game, talk about discipline, everything. You know, everybody will watch us. It's global. It's live. We are very in a really nice situation, you know, because all the other games will happen on Sunday, Monday, but also on Saturday. But in the afternoon, then that's the prime time. 6:30 here PM for us to play in Germany and worldwide. Everybody will watch us how we will perform, but also how we will manage to play in this special kind of situation.
And then Bayern Munich in action 24 hours later, top of the table ahead of Borussia Dortmund at the moment. For you, are they big favourites to win the title once again this season?
Unfortunately, yes. Because Bayern Munich is the stakeholder in the league. They're always really, they're a very great team, and they found back. They struggled a bit in the first part of the season, but now they are full back. But anyway, it will be very interesting to see this after when the lockdown started. You know, it's also for them a really new situation, and to find the rhythm and everything, that will be for all a big challenge, for all clubs a big challenge, and also for Bayern Munich, you know. So everybody's excited to see how the first game will, are you in the flow or not, you know. Yeah, because everybody is, I think, in a good shape and fit, but nobody knows if they are really as a team, you know, if they can compete like it was before.
Last question on Bayern Munich, I promise, before we move on. We had Andre Herrera on the show this week from PSG, talking about the fact that their training schedule is so up in the air, looking to return to the Champions League in August, obviously with the cancellation of the French League. Does the fact that you've got the Bundesliga restarting next weekend give Bayern an advantage looking ahead to the Champions League?
Sure. Give them an advantage, but you know, August, that's a long period to think about what is in August. If we are playing, hopefully we are playing, we also play in the Europa League, but hopefully also the Champions League can finish the 2019-20 season. But so many question marks about that, you know. I'm not sure what is in August, you know. Is allowed to travel, it's not allowed to travel, with supporters, no supporters. So it's a it's a long-term thing, but for Bayern Munich, if it happened, will be a big advantage also to have a very good opportunity to win the Champions League. So it's good for the Bundesliga, I know.
Meanwhile, of course, amongst the chasing pack, Borussia Dortmund, they've won a lot of fans over this season with a young, exciting squad and the sort of football that they play. Who in particular, out of the players, do you think are going to go very far from Dortmund?
I think that Borussia Dortmund is the talented team in the league. So many fantastic young players, you know, like Jadon Sancho. They had a really good opportunity also to challenge Bayern Munich. I think they will play in the second week. They will play against Bayern Munich. It's a key match also to come back or to come closer to Bayern Munich, also to win at the end the championship. But will be a great thing for the Bundesliga if another team, not Bayern Munich, win the Bundesliga. So I support anyway Dortmund, you know, because I'm also a former player from Borussia Dortmund, and hopefully they can do it. But Bayern Munich have more experience, but I like the team from Borussia Dortmund, especially these young players. You know, they are fantastic.
Let's talk about a player that you know well. Luka Jovic, of course, made that big money move to Real Madrid over the summer, 60 million euros. He's only delivered 2 goals so far this campaign.
Yeah.
Came back from quarantine and has fractured his toe, which means he's going to be out for a period as well. Are you surprised how much he struggled given how good he was for Frankfurt last season?
He was fantastic for us, you know, and also he's still young. And these young players, they need time. And if you come to a club like Real Madrid, it is not easy, you know, to find the right way also, how to act there. You know, there are so many superstars around you. He was in Frankfurt, one of our superstars, but still under control from our experienced players. He did his job fantastic, but he is still young and hopefully he will come back because he's special in the box. He's one of the top players for this age. Never seen a player like this in the box in this age. Who can act so dangerous and score so really, really nice goals. But he struggled, that's right. And I think I know that he's not happy right now with his situation also and what happened during the season. So he's injured. Hopefully that injury can help him to come stronger back as like he was before, you know, in the season.
Meanwhile, a lot of Americans plying their trade in the Bundesliga, including Timmy Chandler, of course, playing for Eintracht Frankfurt. How impressed are you with him? How much do you like him as a player?
Yeah, I like him. You know, when I was also a sporting director in Stuttgart and he was playing in Nuremberg, I was trying to get him, you know, but no chance. He moved then later to the Eintracht Frankfurt. So now I'm in Frankfurt. I'm with him and I like him. I like him because so much passion in his game, always positive. Yeah. He can play both sides, on the right and left fullback side. And now he played also in the last games more offensive and he scored some goals, you know, 4 goals. You see, that's unbelievable. Yeah. For him, he never scored 4 goals in a season. He's a positive factor for us. He's also Frankfurt born. Yeah. So, everybody loves him here, and you know it's a really, really great football player. But as a person, I like him more. Yeah.
Final point: just looking ahead to that big game against Borussia Mönchengladbach at the weekend, do you think we're going to see more open, more goals, more action than maybe we've seen previously? Just because the players maybe are a bit out of step, or it's the first game back, or is it going to be cautious? Like, what sort of scoreline would you be thinking we'd be getting?
For you guys, I would love to see a 5-5, you know, draw. But so many goals. That will be also interesting. You know, we have no experience about this situation right now after this long break, and so coming back to play in the league against a really strong team of Borussia Mönchengladbach. They are right now on the Champions League spot. Yeah, to qualify for the Champions League, they played a fantastic season. So, and we have not the advantage. We play at home, but we have not the advantage because of no supporters here in our fantastic stadium with our great supporters. But the character of the game, I think, will change a little bit. But I have no feeling about it. It will be offensive, spectacle, or will they be more careful, you know, because nobody was in this situation before. Hopefully, for the audience and for everybody, it will be a fantastic football match, and everybody will speak about it later.
Freddie Bobic, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated. Good luck for the rest of the season. Now, over on the website, Stefan Ersfeld and Tom Hamilton have teamed up to write on the Bundesliga's extensive plan for kicking off next weekend and what other countries and leagues could learn from it.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
We'll end the show with some real live action as the K-League returns. Before the game, all the players, of course, were in masks. Their temperatures were taken as well to make sure that they didn't have a fever. Of course, the game played in front of an empty stadium. Just a one goal, and it would come in the 84th minute from a corner. Lee Dong-guk with the goal, the 41-year-old, making it 1-0 with 6 minutes to go, proving enough to give Gyeongbuk FC a 1-0 win over Swan Blue Wings. Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you to everyone who has been on. If you want a bit more, I'll tell you what, extra time coming up with Shaka and Danny. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka Hirsov and Danny Higginbottom with me. We start with a Manchester United question, Danny. Do you guys agree with Jules? Pogba is suffering because of average teammates and the circumstances at Man U. Shouldn't this so-praised player carry the team instead of using excuses given by people like Jules?
No, it's a difficult one to answer. That is great. I think when he was signed, he was seen as, you know, this player that can play box-to-box. Box-to-box midfielders don't exist now, so he's supposed to do the defensive and the attacking side. And to Pogba's defence, I would probably suggest that when he joined the club, he was probably told that he's going to be the first of many, many world-class players coming in through the door. That wasn't to be the case. I think Paul Pogba's got frustrated at times himself. I think Manchester United's supporters' biggest problem with Paul Pogba is that everybody knows what he's capable of, but it's just in getting that consistency. I'm hoping that when he gets back from injury and he's playing alongside Bruno Fernandes, then we'll see a different Paul Pogba, because in my opinion, I still believe that he is world-class, but it's very difficult for any individual player to run the show and to drag a team through when things aren't going so well.
He hasn't been great, has he, Shaq?
No, he hasn't. That's not his game. And to the question, you know, I'm trying to look further than the people like Jules comment. What we saw from Paul Pogba at Juventus and with France is that he makes good teams better, but he's not the player that you build a team around, which is why he struggled at Manchester United. That's what they've tried to do, and it's not worked. But there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, were he to move elsewhere, to Real Madrid, as he's been linked with, or go back to Juventus, or indeed, when he goes back with France, you'll see the best of Paul Pogba again. It's just who he is.
Maybe not the best person to ask this question to. It's a bit like asking Shaka about goalkeeping, but Danny will try it. What's the most important quality for a defender? Is it better to be fast, strong, or have a good tackle?
You managed to get a dig in every single show we do. So I'm totting them up, so it's all right. First and foremost, be a defender. Tony Pulis always used to say to us, do what it says on the tin. If you're a defender, you defend first and foremost. And I think that unfortunately, what we've seen over recent years, you know, your players like John Terry, your Vidic's, your Carragher's, they're starting to go out of the game now, and it's all about can you get the ball and can you, you know, pass it 50, 60 yards and take it out of defence. I'm still all about defender first and foremost, and anything else on top of that is a real bonus.
Which decade of the Premier League has been the best in terms of quality of both players and level of football? The 90s, the noughties, or the 2010s? Let's go to you, Danny.
I'm going to go with the noughties. I just think there was, you know, you look at the rivalries in particular, Manchester United and Arsenal, Chelsea then had their run, Manchester City came into it. And we've had some absolutely phenomenal players in that time as well. Henry, we know he was in there in the 90s as well, but he came in the he was there in the 2000s. Ronaldo, Drogba. So yeah, I'm going to go for the noughties definitely. There was some sensational players and outstanding teams.
Shaka?
Agreed. I thought the noughties is the best of the decade. When you look at the early part of the decade with the Manchester United, Arsenal at their absolute best, going undefeated. And then to finish off the decade where you had United again winning the Champions League and doing the double with Ronaldo before he moved to Spain. I think as a decade, none of the others can stand up to that one.
Shaka, who is the better goalkeeper? Lehmann, Van der Sar or Schmeichel?
What kind of question is that? Schmeichel's the best Premier League goalkeeper of all time. So that's easy. I thought Schmeichel, again, for me, best of the Premier League has ever seen. Van der Sar, I did this recently. I think I had him in a third, was it? Lehmann was good, but I don't think he's up in that category.
Danny, which was the most physical team that you played against?
Leicester City were a physical team early 2000s, but then I'd say the Bolton Wanderers team as well. You know, we used to have some really good physical battles with them, and obviously I was part of the physical team as well. So Bolton and Leicester, in my opinion, at different periods, but yeah, they knew how to scrap and then try and get out the other end with themselves with set pieces or a little bit of magic for certain individuals.
Here we go then, Shaka.
What do you want? What do you want? What?
Shaka.
Yes.
What is the weirdest fan interaction you've had during your career?
I say we because I'm going to throw everybody in on this. We've been asked to sign exposed body parts. Let's just leave it at that. It's a family show. But that probably as weird an interaction as, well, unsettling an interaction as I've had, that I can remember or I'll speak about.
And you were asked, Shaka, did you sign said body part?
I signed with only touching the pen. I only touch the pen. Let's just leave it at that.
Danny, what about you?
What about me?
What's the weirdest fan interaction you've had?
some of the weirdest ones, like, you'd be going to the toilet and you'd be stood there, obviously having to pee, and then someone would just come up talking to you. And they talk to you for like 2 or 3 minutes, you're like, I've finished now, I just want to go, I want to wash my hands and go out. And you get cornered, and you're just stuck there, and it's just like, it's really bizarre and really weird, they'll just keep talking to you. And then sometimes, you know, support will come and interact, and obviously you've just had a pin, and you want to shake your hand before you've even washed it.
I want to say so many things, but I want to keep my job, so I'm not going to say anything. Right. Final question.
I'm already in trouble.
I've lost it. I'm all flustered. Okay. Shaka, Craig failed to do it, but can you correctly spell Danny's surname?
H-I-G-G-I-N-B-O-T-T-O-M.
You said it right? Far too quickly, Danny. I don't think you got it right, did he?
No, it wasn't right. But do you know what? To Shaka's defence, that's how my name gets pronounced, Higginbottom. if you pronounced it how it's spelled, then it'd be Higginbotham. But you know, it's not a posh name, so don't try and make it posh.
Oh, it's a TH.
Darling, I like Higginbotham.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
No.
it's like Mrs. Bouquet.
No one knows who Mrs. Bouquet is, Danny.
Well, it was spelled bucket, wasn't it? But you know, I'm just trying to give, you know, the interpretation of it.
That is it. Thank you very much. The Shaq has got his pen in hand, ready to wander around the streets of Boston. That's it. Thanks for telling. Have a lovely weekend. We'll be back soon. Till then, bye-bye.